Pro Prep Academy, in partnership with the Heroes in Our Midst podcast, bring to you More Than an Athlete. Embrace your humanity to unlock performance. This podcast aims to help athletes reach their potential in sport and life through learning from each other and sharing stories. Hi, I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and today's episode is once again in partnership with Pro Prep Academy. And today we are highlighting Martha McCabe. Martha is a retired two-time Olympian in swimming. She won bronze in the 200-meter breaststroke at the 2011 World Championships. At the 2012 Summer Olympics in London, McCabe finished fifth in the final of the 200-meter breaststroke. And at the 2014 Commonwealth Games, she competed in the 100-meter and 200-meter breaststroke. Now, while Martha McCabe was still competing in the pool, she observed that other swimmers struggled when they retired from swimming. So, instead of walking that same path, she ended up starting an organization called Head to Head. And who better to learn what it's all about from than Martha herself? I had the pleasure of sitting down with Martha over Zoom recently, and we started with that.
Head to Head is an organization I've been running now for about 5.5 years. And we promote resilience through Olympian-led mentorship programs. So we're connecting Olympians and national team athletes with youth organizations, varsity teams, and even corporate groups all across the country to have these national team athletes and Olympians come out, share their stories, share the lessons they learned in sport so that the rest of Canada can benefit from these amazing lessons and stories.
Amazing. Martha, what was your motivation to do this and how did you get started?
So there were two kind of main reasons I started Head to Head. One was when I transitioned from being an athlete to that next chapter in my life, I actually kind of, you know, was being asked and approached by several different, whether it was swim clubs, schools, even corporate groups, kind of asking for me to come speak to them. Mm-hmm. And so I set up this cross-country tour where I drove from Victoria, BC, all the way to St. John's, Newfoundland. It was the pilot program of Head to Head. So I had a sponsorship from BMW to drive the car across. It was a ton of fun. But for me, it was such a positive way to transition from my athletic career to that next step. And I had so many teammates that had big challenges transitioning from sport to that next chapter in their life, whether they're high school athletes or Olympians. And for me, this was such a nice way to tie it over and kind of like give me some closure, give back, learn about my career. And so once I did that kind of pilot program, it was awesome. This is a really cool opportunity to help other athletes transition. So that's kind of one piece, is helping athletes transition, whether they're still active or recently retired. We try and get them being the mentors in the program. We compensate them for their time. So like giving them a little bit of financial support, which for a lot of Olympians goes a long way. Yeah. And then the other piece to it is just that youth mental health piece. So trying to provide youth with like tools before they get too deep in these holes of really big challenges. It's giving them these tools of how do you, you know, manage your nerves when you're getting ready for a competition or a test or just feeling anxious in general. Like, what are these Olympians doing in these high pressure moments? And how can I as a child now use these tools? So that's kind of twofold the reason I got started and how it's kind of kept me going today as well.
So walk us through your story. Maybe start with where you grew up and all of that. And how did swimming become a part of your life?
Yeah, I grew up in Toronto. I have three older siblings. So for me and my family, like we were always active and my parents, you know, always kind of had us playing outside. My two older sisters were swimmers. My brother was a runner. So I kind of just followed them into sport. I played every single sport you can name for the longest time. And when I did start swimming, I was probably the worst swimmer in the pool. My age group coach will tell you that. But I just loved competing. I loved as a kid just, you know, working hard and just getting a little bit better. And as I got a little better, I got a little more competitive and it just started to grow and grow. So that's kind of like how I got into it. And slowly over time, it was never, you know, all of a sudden I'm getting really intense and specializing in swimming. That wasn't how it happened for me. It was a slow progression. Playing a ton of sports was really big for me and really kind of what I did all through high school even. It wasn't until the end of high school when I really started to think, okay, maybe I should start to kind of pick one sport and go with it a little further.
You know, that's an interesting part of your story, actually, compared to some other swimmers I've talked to, in that swimming seems to be a sport where the majority of the athletes are doing it and specializing earlier than some other sports. So how do you think you got away with not specializing so soon and keeping all the benefits and the positives of multi-sport in your life?
I think I benefited so much from the other sports. So I was running 6 times a week. I was swimming 6 times a week, whereas a lot of kids my age were swimming 10 times a week. So I was still getting, let's say, the aerobic benefits of running. And then I was playing these other sports. So I was learning how to activate my body, how to be coachable, right? How to move when I'm playing soccer and my coach wants me to do a certain thing, how to move my body that way. Like, so I think I really benefited from just being coached, working in teams, and just moving your body in all these different ways. And so I think that's a big piece. And then I think also it kept me fresh. A lot of my friends in high school started to drop out of sport. But for me, because I was playing so many, I wasn't really sick of any of them. I was just excited to go to all of them. And it helped me through my swim career. You know, once I'd been swimming for 6 years at that high performance level, it really had been only 6 years at the high performance. I hadn't been 16 by then. So it allowed me to really keep going with my career. And I think that's, I really credit that multi-sport beginning to how I got to 2 Olympic Games.
Was there ever a time in your life, I think this happens to young athletes a lot and to parents as well, they feel the pressure from coaches that say, you can't do what you're just telling me you did. And did that come at any point? Was there a point where you had to sort of stand your ground and say, no, I'm playing these other sports? Or when you actually finally got to the point where you did decide to focus, like, was there pressure on you?
Yeah, the funny thing is, there was pressure on my parents that I didn't actually know about, but they have since told me. Yeah, my parents have told me that they had coaches from other clubs coming and telling them, like, you've got to get her, you know, she's got to stop running, like, get her in the pool more, because the running was crushing my legs and then I wasn't able to do all the strokes and all the stuff. So, but my parents, they didn't really care. It wasn't about performance for them. They could see that I loved running and loved swimming. So they just kind of said, like, thanks for your opinion, but, like, we'll let her just keep going. So I didn't actually know about that. I was very fortunate to have an age group coach who just supported me in both sports, especially in all sports. And he really encouraged me to do that. And so from a personal standpoint, no, I didn't have that pressure, but my parents did. And I'm very thankful that they kind of knew to just let me play and have fun.
Yeah, that's incredible, actually. Do they have a background in sport that they had some background to say, no, we know enough to know? Or were they just, I think some parents listening right now want to know, well, how did they know to do that? Because when coaches get on us as parents and they say, your kid won't make it if she doesn't do A, B, and C, they listen to the coaches because they're the ones that apparently know.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I probably can't answer it fully because I don't 100% know. But I do have 3 older siblings, so who are fairly high, like, performers themselves. So for sure that would have played a role. Like, they know, you know, seeing them go through even just high school, and my oldest sister would have gone into university. I think my parents' attitude in life in general is just like, let's enjoy it. Of course, work hard, and, like, here are tools to do that. But if you're having fun, that they do believe that that's kind of the most important thing. And I think I was fortunate in that way.
Yeah, super fortunate. And I think that's good for us to be talking about that right now. I'm actually loving that we're having this conversation in particular for the parents, because I think part of what I've learned in doing this podcast about learning who the humans are behind these incredible performances, I often find that maybe 100% of the time I have found that it's the humans that have said, I'm going to do what I love. And then they're amazing at it. And I think that that's a huge thing. So obviously swimming did become your focus at some point. When you were ready to focus, it became that. So maybe lead us to that point when you made the decisions, this is what I'm going to do. And maybe Olympics was in your sights. So how did that play out for you?
At the end of high school, I kind of became a little bit better in running and swimming. Like, I naturally am just a little bit more of an endurance athlete. So I just started to kind of, you know, find myself at the top of my age group in those, in the province or in the region or whatever, in those 2 sports. And so by the time I got to the end of high school, I started to think I wanted to kind of specialize in one. I didn't know which one. And I know a lot of kids always ask me, like, how did you choose? I just chose because I was a little bit better in swimming. I didn't know. And that's like part of, I think, everyone's journey is you don't know what's coming ahead. And I didn't know. I just kind of picked it. And for me, what put me onto the Olympics was I went to an Olympic trials for swimming and I just saw my sister's friend qualify for the Olympics. And so what that did for me was it just opened my eyes to who these Olympians were. It made me realize they're just normal people. You know, she'd been over at my house and that was really cool for me to see. It wasn't like these are absolute like robots and like superstars that are not human, right? It's like kind of exactly what you guys are talking about here. They're human beings. And so when I saw that, it was like, okay, that's something I maybe want to try. Like, how do I do that? Where do I need to go? And at the time I was getting close to graduating from high school. And so UBC had just hired a coach from Hungary, who is a breaststroke specialist coach. That was my specific kind of specialty. And he had a little group out there that he was coaching. And so it was kind of a no-brainer for me at the time. It's like, if I want to try to go after this Olympic goal, I'll go train with the best breaststroke coach in Canada and one of the best in the world and kind of see what happens, like put myself out there. So.
Wow. So when you stepped literally into the pool, like being trained by this guy and taking that next step, did it kind of rock your world a little bit or were you ready?
Oh, it rocked my world. Yeah. I went in there from running 6 times a week and swimming 6 times a week to swimming 10 times a week in the pool, 5 times a week dry land training, just way more swimming and intensity than I had ever experienced. And my coach, his name was Joseph Nagy. He's a Hungarian coach, was a very strict guy. And he came in with like a worldview of success. It wasn't about me trying to qualify for the Olympic team. Within, you know, weeks of me training with him, it was about becoming, you know, top five in the world. And so, yeah, it absolutely completely reconfigured my brain and, you know, made me realize what is hard work and what is a big goal and where should I be focusing my efforts? And it was huge, but ultimately it got me to where I was. And I'm so grateful for that experience.
Yeah. And did breaststroke remain your stroke? That's what you did?
Yeah, it did.
So I think at that point, sometimes when kids get into a sport or an athlete decides I'm going to do this and then it's that hard, where do you think your strength came from that you wanted to do that? It's a different kind of fun. How did you redefine that for yourself and what kept you going? What was your motivation?
Yeah, my long-term kind of motivation was just, it was those Olympic rings for me. And the reason behind that, I honestly am not 100% sure. Like you just have that drive, right? And that dream. And for me, that's what it was. It just came from within, honestly. Like it was what I loved. And I think what kind of kept me going though was the small progressions every day and like every year. It was seeing myself work really hard and then seeing myself improve at whatever. Sometimes it was those end outcome time-based goals. And sometimes it was like, wow, now I can hold my breath for 50 meters. Like that's really cool to see and like actually feel the improvements. And I think over my career, I like slowly got better at recognizing, you know, when I was making those improvements and celebrating them and like feeling good about them along the way. But I think that's what kept me going. It was just those little improvements, checking off little things and seeing how much, you know, hard work can do for you. Like just seeing it actually play out was like something I loved.
So there's a long stretch between having the dream, being willing to put in the work, and then actually qualifying for an Olympic Games. So that's a bit of a gap. Lead us further. Yeah. How did your climb go?
So my first year at UBC was actually going into an Olympic year. So I arrived in September and in April, they were doing trials for the Olympic team. So for me, that first year, as much as that coach kind of shook me up and how, like, you know, how it just physically was so challenging, the goal was very clear because the Olympic trials were in April. So it was like very easy for me to just stay motivated that first year. And like I said, I was progressing. So I was really excited. I was extremely confident going into those Olympic trials that I would be on that Olympic team. And I remember like my whole family came out, we were in Montreal and I just had to come top two in the event and swim a certain time standard. And I like can remember that whole event perfectly well. And I think it happens to a lot of athletes and a lot of swimmers, especially, but I ended up coming third in the race. And at 18 years old, when I had just changed my whole life, moved out to Vancouver from Toronto, kind of felt like I had done every single thing I possibly could. When I missed that team, it was just crushing. And I was at that moment kind of like, okay, I guess I'm not good enough. And like you say, I guess this isn't for me. And I'm kind of, maybe I should have chose running. Like maybe I should go back and do something else. So yeah, that was like kind of probably the first biggest upset in my swim career and probably my life in general, just really shook me up. And, but it was extremely necessary. Like there were a ton of different things I did to kind of get through that. And eventually, obviously when I did, I found reasons to kind of get back in the water and find that motivation again and keep going. And then the journey wasn't still a straight shot to getting to the Olympics, but of course there were lots of those highs and lows, but I think that experience kind of gave me some tools to deal with those future lows that came and get through it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you finished third, did you feel you had had a good swim and you had swam as hard as you could?
I definitely knew I swam as hard as I could, but at the time, my perspective just was that didn't really matter. I was like very focused on that one outcome goal. I wasn't in a position at that time to recognize that like I had done what I could and the process that I went through was really great. I didn't have that perspective yet. I was very young and I just was very hard on myself and had really high expectations for that one single goal and one single outcome. So that's why when I missed it, I was just like, okay, I'm done. Like I should move on. That was my real mindset at the time.
When you look back, if you think September to April, that would have been like a rocket ship going into that training regime, like less than a year and then making it to the Olympics. Really? You know, I wasn't sure. I said, if this ends with her going to the Olympics right away, wow. So that obviously stretched out. So you just told us, and of course we know you did go to the Olympics at some point. So step by step, what got you back? Like, did you take a month off? Did you, you know, you didn't qualify? Did you actually take some time to reevaluate, or did you just go back to the pool the next week? How did that work?
I took time to reevaluate if I wanted to swim.
Yeah.
I took time off at least a month and I really just escaped the sport completely. I didn't go to the pool. I didn't think of swimming. I went out, had fun with my friends in university and like tried to hang out even with non-swimmers, just wanted to get away from the sport and just be with other people and experience another piece of my life. And I really considered giving it up. But what got me through was speaking with a lot of older athletes and who were mentors of mine and who had been through what I was going through. They'd you know, been there themselves where they'd missed Olympic teams. And a lot of them kind of told me like, I know how this feels, but like, you've got to be patient and just keep pushing. Like you're making all the right decisions, but exactly like you said, they told me like, it's only been since September, you know, like it's only been 7 months or whatever it is. So like, you need to give yourself more time. Getting to the Olympics takes the hard work that you're doing, but for years and years and years. And so it's not like, you know, from there, I just popped in the pool and was like, all right, well, then let's just keep going. That's not how it went. I was still like, just not motivated. And I just felt down. But what I did start to do was a couple things. I tried to integrate other things that I really liked back into my swimming and at that time. So, you know, going out for runs again, just to slowly get back into getting in shape and just enjoying swimming again. And one thing I really started to do was like journal a lot. I'd write down, you know, little goals that I had in a session or in a week. Like this week, I'm going to go into the pool and all I'm going to think about, I'm not going to worry about the times that usually I'm so focused on and like stressing about. I'm going to focus on how far I can get off each wall when I do a push off, or focus on, you know, my technique, like just little things to just keep my mind busy on something else. That's kind of how I broke it down. And just slowly over time, as I was checking off those mini little goals each practice, it helped me just feel like that enjoyment again. It was like, okay, I'm doing something every single day here now. And that was huge for me in terms of getting back into it.
That's super cool advice. And were you still with the same coach? And how did that collaboration work through this bit of a journey for you where, well, the coach is still there. How did that work out?
Yeah, the coach was still there. And my whole, like most of my teammates were going to those Olympics. So they were all still training hard. And I think that's probably a part of the reason that it helped me kind of keep going too, is like, I wanted to be there for my teammates. You know, once I did take that break and get back and like got back in the pool, like I was a tool for them to train, right? Like I was pushing them in training to go to the games as well. So he was honestly really great. Like he allowed me the time off But he also pushed me to like to get back to it too, which I think was helpful. You know, he was someone who's there to kind of, as I did start coming in, it was like, okay, now that you're coming back, like we need to focus still when we're here, and like keep pushing me through practices and training. Yeah, so he was very supportive through that time regardless. Like he wanted me to make that Olympic team too. So I'm sure he's disappointed as well. But, you know, looking back now, I wasn't actually prepared to make that Olympic team. And right. He knew that, I think, more than I did at the time. So it was, yeah, so he kind of had that good perspective as well.
Yeah, some great collaboration, great understanding his athlete, obviously. And then led you through that next sort of quadrennial, right? Because now you're looking at the next 4 years and the training. Because I'm sure as you got back into swimming now, your goal remained the same, right? You were driven to get to those rings.
Yeah. And I would almost say it shifted a little bit because I had a world championship the next year. And I think I realized that I needed to just break this big, huge dream down a little bit more. So instead of just, you know, going into those Olympics where I missed the team, I had the Olympic rings taped to the ceiling above my bed. So it was like the first thing I saw every day, last thing I saw, like that was what drove me. And while I think that served a great purpose at the time, this next year, I took that down. It was, right. What am I doing for this year? Like, what am I doing for this season and for the next 4 months? And I just tried to break that huge dream way smaller down into little chunks. I still had that, of course, like you say, in the back of my head, I wanted to go to the Olympics. But by the time those next 4 years kind of rolled around, they kind of just came upon me because I was focusing on the step-by-step, daily training, monthly goals, every 4 months, what was my season goal? Trying to get to a world championships, like little checkpoints. And that just made it so much more, it was easier for me to kind of digest and work through piece by piece.
Right. So what year are we in here? And you were talking about world. So where were you sitting in the world and sort of where are you at right now in terms of how you sat in the world of swimming and what the reality was of you, you know, being an Olympian and doing well there, even now?
Yeah. So right after I missed that Olympic team, that summer, I ended up swimming, you know, so 4 months later, I ended up swimming way under the Olympic cut before the Olympic Games even happened. I swam, I became the second fastest Canadian in the 200 meter breaststroke for females. So very quickly, I was there. I just wasn't quite there at the trials. And so the reality was, you know, it was there. The performance was there. It wasn't a good enough performance to get me in the final or on the podium, which was ultimately kind of what my goals became and what my coach's goals really were. So very quickly after the Olympics, I was in a position to qualify for that next year, that national team, world championships, and like be in a place where I wanted to be on the national team every year for the next at least 4 years.
Right. So you in swimming, you qualify for the national team every year. Do you have to re-qualify? It's always about times.
Correct. Every single year you have to qualify. Yeah.
Yeah. So now you're sort of cruising from 2009 into 2010 and maybe lead us to the next world championship.
I got onto the national team in 2009, my first senior national team. And that progression being on the national team was very quick. Like that next year I was seventh in the world. And I had a teammate who was, you know, broke the world record in 2009. So working with her was just an incredible opportunity for me. I got to be in the pool while she did that at the world championships. And just having that mentor in the ready room before a competition, you know, moments before those high pressure situations, having my teammate beside me was extremely helpful and really just a privilege. And then, yeah, I went on. 2011 was a huge highlight in my swim career. I won a medal in that world championships, which was like a huge boost of confidence going into that 2012 Olympic year, where I qualified finally for my first Olympic team in Montreal.
Okay, tell us about that moment. That moment in Montreal when you actually did it.
Yeah, it was really amazing. My whole family had come out and I didn't know it, but like, so my family has a nickname. My dad used to always call me Fleabag when I was growing up. And I remember getting ready for my race and my team manager came up to me and she said, "Hey, Fleabag." And I had never told anyone that. So I was like, why did you just say that? Where did that come from? She's like, "Oh, you don't know." And I was like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, in the audience, there's about 40 people up there with t-shirts that say Team Fleabag." And I was like, "Oh man, that's hilarious." Like I had no idea that anyone was coming, really. I knew probably my parents, maybe my siblings, but I didn't know beyond that. And so getting ready for that race, I kind of told myself, don't look up into the stands until you're done racing. Like, stay focused on this race. Because I knew seeing them would just make me emotional and really, like, you know, excited to see them and happy and grateful. And so I just really stayed focused on racing my 200 meter breaststroke that I had to do, and just kind of swam the race. And as soon as I hit the wall, you know, qualifying was amazing, such an honor, but looking up in the stands and seeing my family just celebrating was very special. Like, they were going nuts, and I was just like, wow. Seeing 40 people with, you know, Team Fleabag was a really cool experience for me.
What a great, great moment. So that was in Montreal, and now you're off to the 2012 Summer Olympics in London, which looked like an amazing Olympics, just to be at in general. What are some of your takeaways from that 2012 London Olympics, and how did you do there?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I mean, going to the Olympics, I was still only 22 years old at the time, and just being in an Olympic village, you know, with all the different athletes from all these different countries, seeing all the different body shapes. You got like the tallest people and the shortest people and biggest upper body, biggest lower body. It's a really cool experience being in there. I was extremely fortunate to have some of my family come out to those Olympics as well. My cousin was actually on the Canadian men's rowing team, so I got to be at those games with him, which was, you know, amazing. And he ended up winning an Olympic medal, which was pretty special to be just even around. And the games for me were like a very positive experience. I ended up placing fifth in the 200 meter breaststroke final. And again, like, the highlight looking back was finishing at the end of the race. And just, I remember looking up at the scoreboard and just saying, like, wow, because, you know, the journey to get there was so big. And looking up, again, pretty crazy experience, but looking up at the end of that race, you know, I'm in a stadium with 20,000 fans, and the first person I kind of looked up to was my mom, was standing right there. And just to be able to see that again in that moment was like extremely special and like pretty wild. So yeah, overall it was like a very fun experience.
I find when I watch swimming, I always wonder, like, so much hard work to shave off a teeny tiny amount of time, like one tenth, 1/100th of a second can make the difference. And swimming too, when you're done a race, like, do you push yourself to the edge? Like, are you in pain when you finish a swimming race, or are you so fit and all of that? What is that like, first of all? And that's where I think the exhilaration of finishing a race like that would just be so extra.
Yeah. You're in a lot of pain when you finish a race. The amount you train compared to the race is insane. Like, you're training so much more than what your race is, mm-hmm. but still you're pushing yourself so hard in the race that you just tighten right up. Like, the final 45 seconds of a race, you're just in pain and you're just fighting to keep going, basically. And just trying to remind yourself of like technique and stuff like that. But it's a lot of pain. And yeah, you touch the wall and it's like, there's just a flood of emotions, right? Like, it's also, you're from devastation for missing a podium to like exhilarating because you just raced at the Olympics and the crowd is insane, and you know that you've lived out this dream that you've been chasing for so long. And it's a really big mixed bag of emotions for sure. So yeah, it's different in swimming, I'm sure, than other sports, but
absolutely. So the Olympics came and went for you. It was your first time. Often people reach a mountaintop like that, they get to an Olympic Games, they're like, okay, I'm good. I think I'm good. You weren't done. Did you know right away? Nope, I'm keeping going. Was it the fifth place finish that got you, that kept you going, or what kept you going?
So I did take time off after the London 2012 Olympics. I, again, really considered moving on with my life to something else. I actually remember like applying for business school and even, you know, getting through that and kind of decide, like, really getting to a point of like, okay, like, this is an option now. Like, do I want to stop swimming? So I really took time to do that. I took time away from the pool. You know, again, similar to when I missed the Olympics back in 2008, in 2012, I at the time was quite upset with the fifth place finish, as you can imagine. You know, so I just was really considering stopping, in part because of that, in part because I just felt like maybe, yeah, I could just do something else. But yeah, I guess through really going into that and really allowing myself to explore that next chapter and what that decision was, I just kind of realized, like, I started to swim a little bit on the side, and I kind of realized that I did still like it. I love being with my friends and going to the pool. Is like, I love physical activity. Like, it's fun, and sport is fun. And I still enjoyed that, and that piece of getting better. And so I kind of just did end up, again, continuing to swim, but really doing it piece by piece. I wasn't like, okay, this is for 4 more years. I'm going to Rio. In 2016, it was, I'm just going to swim for a little longer and go to maybe World Championships this summer and see how it goes. So it was, again, bringing it back down to those pieces.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Okay. So one piece at a time, lead us through some of those pieces till, I suppose, till you were, you know, done the swimming game.
Yeah. So I just like, yeah, basically just kept swimming. I had just a whole new perspective on swimming. Like, I loved it, but I realized, I think, through the next 2 years or so, that it really was for me about those day-to-day moments, being with friends, working with coaches, and just trying to get better at something and trying to push myself. It kind of sounds cliche, but like, I had a shift in my perspective of why I was swimming and what I was doing. And it made it easier for me to get to those next Olympics, because I wasn't putting this huge pressure on myself, because I knew that if I didn't qualify, I was still going to be a happy person. My family is still going to love me. Like, I'm still going to have my same friends. And that kind of gave me a bit of relief and just allowed me to enjoy the sport a little bit more. And it allowed me to try and be a better teammate as well. So like, trying to empower the younger kids coming up, and I got satisfaction from that as well. And so I went on and eventually qualified for Rio, which was another, you know, amazing experience getting to represent Canada. And I knew kind of going into Rio that I was starting to finish up my career. So by the time I competed in Rio and finished up, I was like happy to move on and prepared to move into that next chapter of my life.
Yeah, man. And to be in London and then Rio, I mean, those experiences are incredible. And I love that you keep saying you still loved the sport. It was still fun for you. And I think that's important for people to hear too, that it wasn't just work, and you need to find the fun in it, because it is such hard work. So you retired from sport, and then amazing, this head-to-head comes to be. And we talked a little bit about it. I'd like to dive into it a little bit more. And I want to start with asking you, why head-to-head? What does that mean to you? How did you come up with that, and why?
Yeah, well, truthfully, it was a friend that came up with it. I think head-to-head, the whole purpose is really around mental resilience and like the mental skills, the soft skills, the life skills. That's really what we're about. Of course, we have Olympians helping kids sometimes in the pool or on the ice or on the field with some of those technical skills. But the real mission for us is the mental side. And so I wanted it to be, you know, that's why the head to head, obviously being like a little sports terminology, yeah. But focusing on that kind of mindset piece. And yeah, that's kind of where it came from.
Do you remember maybe your first appearance when you first realized, people actually don't mind hearing what I have to say, and I think my experiences can really make a difference for someone?
Yeah, I'm not sure I remember the exact first one, but I do remember a time in my life where I started to see, oh, wow, like people are actually listening to what I'm saying right now, which was both terrifying and I think eye-opening. It was like, okay, I need to start making sure I'm like, got something to say. and what do I believe? And what do I want to say too? You know, I think it's really important as any role model, like, what do you care about? And what messages do you want to share? And for me, I've always been someone who, like, I really do, like everyone, you know, most people do, like, I care about other people, and that's what brings me satisfaction, is like helping others. And so I think just trying to make sure I was using my platform as best I could. So understanding what are the challenges that people are facing right now, and hey, I'm facing those same ones, so let me share with you what I'm going through, and then here's some things that have helped me, maybe they can help you too.
Yeah. Has it surprised you how relevant the Olympic journey and an athlete's journey is to any walk of life, really, any business, any corporation, any individual? Has that struck you as kind of surprising?
I mean, it's surprising when you're young and you just kind of have no idea. Once you start going through it, you can see that, you know, I guess for me, when I started head to head, I had no business background. And so starting an organization, I kind of just went in very naively and just said, hey, like, I don't know, I'm going to try and figure this out. And what I learned very quickly was exactly what you're saying. I learned that oh, wow, okay, this is challenging. I'm going to really need to work hard every single day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first 6 months or 8 months of my business, I didn't make one sale. So I needed to bounce back and just like figure out new ways to do something and try again and really use like self-talk in the morning when I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing with my life? Like, you know, so it's all those same things. And I think through that first year of starting Head to Head, I kind of realized like, this is amazing. I can use my skills from swimming and get through anything and achieve anything too, which was extremely empowering for me and ultimately for Head to Head, of course.
Of course, for sure. When did it grow? Like, or did you start growing it right away? Did you start gathering other athletes right away? And how did you choose who you wanted to work with or have working for Head to Head?
So at first I really actually just called like 4 to 5 of my closest friends that were Olympians, told them about the idea, asked them like, would they be willing to kind of, you know, almost take the risk with me and try it out. And they were extremely supportive and, you know, just wanted to, they saw the value in it and for both themselves and for, you know, young people at the time was our main focus. And so it started small and it probably took, once I started the actual like organization beyond just that pilot program that I shared, it probably took like a year, 2 years before I started to feel this little snowball effect. I'm like, okay, people are actually buying in. People are coming back, you know, they're doing it 1 year, they're coming back again. And then I think the big booster was that I ended up doing a master's at Queen's University in management, innovation, and entrepreneurship. And it just gave me this huge boost of confidence to grow it further. So that was when I like hired an employee to help me with the administration and just really push to grow it. And so now we've had, you know, over 50 Olympians take part in the program across the country. We've operated in every single province. So then it kind of was like, okay, here we go. And that boost of confidence through school really was helpful.
What kind of organizations or groups has Head to Head worked with?
All sorts. I think like obviously because of my swimming background, a ton of swim clubs.
Sure.
We've worked with national sport organizations, provincial sport organizations. And then we do really work with a lot of schools because we charge a fee, probably more independent schools. But we do have a lot of public schools that kind of take part as well. And then, you know, we've run hockey clinics too. So we'll work with hockey clubs, soccer clubs here and there. And then any sort of youth organizations, like, you know, any sort of leadership groups that kind of run in different provinces, they've seen benefit in working with us as well. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. And then over the past probably 2-3 years, we've really opened it up and we've started running, you know, employee wellness programs with different corporate teams as well, which has been a pretty fun way to kind of just expand into that corporate world and employee wellness program yeah. world as well.
In all your work with youth, I'm assuming you've noticed different challenges and probably challenges that come up. What would you say is one of the greatest challenges facing our youth? And in that you try to teach them resilience and share that strength that you gained from your journey and those that work with you. What is the greatest challenge facing our youth these days, like just mentally and inside? What are they facing?
Yeah, so we did some market research about 2 years ago, really asking this question, because that's what we wanted to do is help them solve these problems. So let's ask them directly, what are the problems and what are the challenges that they're facing? And a big one just came back to managing like feelings of overwhelm, anxiety, just a lot going on. And over the past year and a half with this pandemic, it's only increased. That's what we're hearing from clubs we speak to, schools we speak to, teachers, parents are all saying that youth right now are feeling overwhelmed and just overly anxious. It's a big thing. So that's kind of one of our big focuses is having, you know, these Olympians who many have dealt with this as well. They'll cope with their own anxiety, but also they've managed nerves before competition. That's a very common one, right? They've been in those high pressure situations and they've coped with those similar feelings. So that's where we try and have the Olympians speak to what strategies did they use? Was it building routines? Was it using mindfulness, like deep breathing, journaling, you know, using teammates or mentors or coaches, like sports psychs? What were the tools that they used? And just having them speak about them to almost give these youth strategies to use and also just give them some like credible source to be speaking about these things. A lot of youth really will listen to Olympians, which is pretty cool, but let's get them saying like specifically talking about this stuff openly to kind of help these kids through it.
If someone said, like, you mentioned resilience right off the top, but what's your main message to these kids? Now, you know, you've named the challenge and a lot of kids are dealing with this. And like you say, COVID has not made it easier on any of us, especially our youth who have missed some of those basic things, I think, in the last year and a half that many of us got when we were their age. What's your main message when you head to a group and say, here we are, we're going to get, you know, we're going to get stronger. We're going to do what?
I think the biggest thing that most of the Olympians do is they let these kids know that they're not alone. Every Olympian has felt the same way. Like we've all been nervous. We've all felt overly anxious. We've all had really upsetting things happen in our lives. And those can vary, right? Like something very severe and traumatic to one person could be something smaller to another based on their own life experiences. But we've all had feelings of like wanting to give up and like being really devastated about something. So I think the biggest message is just having the Olympians say like, you're not alone. I've been there, and helping these kids realize that like, there's a path forward. There's tools you can use to try and get there. And I think one of the really big benefits of Head to Head is we try and have different Olympians speak. So what resonates with one kid from one Olympian, if you have another Olympian in, that message might resonate way more with them. And so trying to have a diverse group of Olympians come through, share their stories, can be really beneficial to different kids who are going through our program.
It just sounds amazing. Like, you guys are human with these kids. You are real and you are meeting them at their level and where they're at and showing them, hey, you guys, we're just the same. We're all humans. We're all people. And we're you know, walking this journey together. You really come alongside of them. This head-to-head thing, I'm excited about it. I'm excited to even let more people know about it. I'm excited that I've gotten to know about it today. And Martha, I'm really excited that we've gotten to know you and far beyond just being a swimmer. And what do you hope for head-to-head in the future? Where do you see it going? Do you love how it's going? Do you have new sort of dreams about it? Tell us what you're thinking.
Yeah, I've really loved running the program, obviously, for all the reasons I've shared. It's extremely fulfilling. There's so many reasons for me to wake up every day and try and make it better and improve the program. I think even just with the pandemic over the past couple years, like we've had to kind of reinvent ourselves in certain ways. Everything's moved virtually, which has provided some new opportunities with us too. You know, now we can connect a tiny school in Nova Scotia with an Olympian based in Victoria. So I've been excited just to go through the changes. And for me, outside of swimming, and I don't even do so many of the talks now. I really enjoy the business side of it and developing the business and trying to just grow it and provide more opportunities and more unique opportunities too. So like really trying to go out there and hear what are the challenges that even teachers and schools are facing, and like how can we help them in their classrooms. And so my goal is just to kind of keep doing that, keep growing it as I can, and really trying to stay relevant to what are the new challenges with the pandemic and what else has come along, and trying to be something that is just a tool for anyone to kind of use to kind of carry themselves through their own journey.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. It's a new goal for you. It's your new Olympic rings, you know, becoming the best you can be at what you're doing. And it's all about other people, which I think is really is testament to the human that you are and that you've let us see today. And I think that's amazing. So thank you for doing that. Head to Head, Martha McCabe, our time together today has been really cool.
Thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
And that is Martha McCabe, founder of Head to Head, helping athletes transition out of sport, giving them some financial support, and giving them a platform to provide youth with tools to manage life in so many ways. And so much she's learned from her own Olympic journey. She learned to focus on and celebrate all the little improvements along the way. And then the big celebrations just came. So cool. Thank you to Pro Prep Academy for joining with us here at Heroes in Our Midst and sharing the stories that we are telling with even more people. We hope you found yourself inspired by Martha's story. And if you did, share it and subscribe to hear more. Thanks.